Hi, everybody. This is Brett. You will be hearing this on Friday, March 13th, or after. It is Free Bonus Friday. And what I have for you today, I hope you enjoy this one. First 35 minutes of our latest installment of the Picture of the Month Club. Dutch and I dig deeper into the film Terminator 2 Judgment Day than anything I can find on YouTube, right? I looked, I saw what the competition is. I think we did a very good job with this one. The entire show runs almost 2 hours, so you're hearing roughly a third of it. And boy, we don't even get into the special effects feats of this film until well into the second hour. I hope if you're just a casual listener, a free listener, which is fine, thank you for your time, especially now, especially today, I hope you enjoy this little snip. And we talk about in this show running a little experiment. If you have, because there are people in the world like this, you've never seen The Terminator, the 1984 James Cameron film, or Terminator 2 Judgment Day, the 1991 James Cameron sequel, and you've never seen the trailer for either film, go watch them and have an authentic experience. Do not watch the trailers, just watch the movies. They're easy to obtain if you're resourceful, trust me. Then report back to us on your experience. One of the arguments that I'm going to make in the show is that the trailer kind of takes away from the quality of the viewer experience, even though the film is still an action masterpiece. So anyway, I hope this conversation about a film, about preventing the apocalypse, pleasantly shifts your attention away from wherever it might be focused today. Thank you so much for listening, and please take care.
Now, don't take this the wrong way, but you are a Terminator, right?
Yes. Sabadan Systems Model 101.
No. Holy shit. You're really real. I mean... Oh. You're like a machine underneath, right? But sort of alive outside?
I'm a cybernetic organism, living tissue over a metal endoskeleton.
This is intense. Get a grip, John. Okay. You're not here to kill me. I figured that part out for myself. So what's the deal?
My mission is to protect you.
Yeah? Who sent you?
You did. 35 years from now, you reprogrammed me to be your protector here, in this time.
This is deep.
Because I could not stop for death. He kindly stopped for me. The carriage held but just ourselves and immortality. And immortality. We slowly drove. He knew no haste. And I had put away my labor and my leisure too, for his civility, for his civility.
Dutch, welcome back.
Hi, Brett. Nice to be back.
I am so excited about this film. I'm going to tell you a quick story and then we're going to get into it. So it's 1990. I'm in middle school. I'm in my friend Lloyd Alquist's basement and we're getting ready to watch Total Recall. And I'm not afraid to say Lloyd Alquist, his whole name, because in the future, Lloyd Alquist becomes Epic Lloyd, who is the collaborator in the epic rap battles of history with the musician Nice Peter. So at this point, he's just a young John Connor-esque tween there with me, and we're getting ready to watch Total Recall. Before the film, on this VHS, there is like a 90-second teaser trailer showing the assembly of a robot. And then at the very end, it gets covered with Arnold skin, and you hear, "I'll be back." Now, I had seen the original Terminator movie. My dad showed it to me. He said, "This is one of the greatest action movies ever made." And boy, was he excited when I told him what I saw on this VHS. So I went to see it, and I will tell you what I shouted on my way out of the theater 29 years ago. Best action movie ever. I stand by that. T2.
I just call T1 T.
Right? T2. My dad had, like, once we started VHSing back in the day, it was one of the first movies. I probably saw it when I was like 10, I think. And it is an intense movie for a boy. Basically borders on horror, right? It has sci-fi and action elements in it, but it pulls in its style from a lot of like older horror movies. And I think that's one of the interesting things with Terminator 2 is that it actually transitions more into an action, almost comedy kind of movie.
I feel like T, yeah, as the kids call it, and this isn't a show about T, but it's almost, I think, unavoidable to discuss it when talking about this, because all right, you say potentially greatest action movie
for T2.
For T2, I might contend with that, but I would say that T in and of itself is a, like, great, great horror film. I think it has all of the elements of a horror movie, and I guess you could say it's like a sci-fi horror film, but I mean, I think structure and plot wise and also just like gag wise, the movie works in total as a horror film. And I do think, just because I freshly watched T2 last night, it does maintain a lot of, when I say gags, I mean like visual setups that pay off in the audience and like scares.
Yeah,
T2 has a lot of scares in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When, okay.
Don't you think so?
Well, when you say gags, let's just talk about the first movie. Like, let's compare the two. What are you talking about when you say gags or setups in the original Terminator?
I think maybe Terminator 2, I could probably draw a better example, but there's like some almost like jump scare kind of elements to it a little bit, where like you're setting up an audience to react in a very particular way. The emotion, a lot of the times that's like attempting to be invoked from Terminator, there's a lot where it's just like stimulation, right?
Yeah.
Like the whole beginning of the movie is just like pure stimulation of like action, lasers being fired and flying drone thingies that are blowing up, and it's like a war scene, right?
Yeah.
But like once you get into this game of like cat and mouse of like trying to get John Connor, and there's like this one scene that like I think in particular that like works really well, which is like they're escaping from the asylum.
Yes.
That Linda Hamilton's in.
Yeah.
The whole mood of that sequence, and we'll definitely talk about color. I want to talk about color in this episode.
Yes.
It's like a really kind of cool motif that's well involved. But everything about the tone of that sequence is kind of like a horror film. And here's like a really like small in particular like example, but like she is strapped into the bed and the warden that's like putting her down like bends over and like looks at her face and like licks her cheek.
The orderly.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
The orderly. Yeah. 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 It's like everything about that sequence is kind of reminiscent of like kind of like there's actually a specific moment that is like even in like trying to put you in the headspace of the character, was where like Linda Hamilton's like running around ways and the elevator door open and like Schwarzenegger like steps out.
Yes.
Of the elevator. It feels like a horror movie moment, or when Robert Patrick walks through the metal gate, right? Like there's that one shot where they're all behind the metal gate and he's kind of pursuing them, and then he takes out a gun, and then he like really slowly, for dramatic effect, like walks through the gate and his liquid metal body kind of goes through the prison bars. That is a thing that's being set up to invoke a fearful response of the audience, which is kind of like what horror directors actually like excel at and do and try and do for, you know, 80 minutes, 90 minutes of a movie.
Absolutely. And I think that, yeah, so you have her encounter with the T-800, the Arnold Schwarzenegger character, which she does not know is on her side at this point in the film. So you have something that is almost like an encounter with Jason Voorhees or something you'd see in Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Horror that you experience with this character, even though you know much more than she does, just in the way that, that's kind of laid out and established, it's very, very effective. On the other hand, like on the other side of the hallway, just moments later, you have this T-1000 Terminator, the bad Terminator, there to kill John Connor. Do something that in obviously in real life and even in visual effects had never been seen before and was so disorienting. It was the kind of thing that you would only see in like an 80s horror movie. Like that was the only frame of reference for something like that. So I think there's just as many examples in the first Terminator film. But yeah, you're right. The second film is actually pretty rich with those types of things.
I'd even add like towards the climax of the film, like I think you actually kind of hit it on the head with like the Jason Voorhees thing, right? Is like, here's this thing where like the psychotic killer, the T-1000, chasing our protagonist all the time. And then when they think they have like a moment of victory where they've defeated, where they can escape the bad guy, he literally just like, I hate when we do this, but it's worth it. which is like jumping around the movie so much.
Yeah.
So they head into the steel mill.
Yeah.
And if you think about this entire sequence, right, it's like this like delayed, it's this like setup of victory that's followed by defeat. Setup of victory that's like followed by defeat. That's like supposed to like, it's essentially like it keeps the adrenaline going in the movie, right? So like, so the semi truck filled with what do you call that stuff?
Liquid nitrogen.
Arnold like gets the truck to flip over and crack open. Now it's covered Robert Patrick in this liquid nitrogen. He's totally frozen.
And he's made entirely of like alloy metal, which freezes with liquid nitrogen. We are about to be, in a couple of minutes, we're going to be courteous to the people who listen to these shows and never watch any of the movies. Yeah, but that's an important detail I'll insert right there.
So think about the setup from, you've never seen this movie before as like an audience perspective, right? Like here's like how horror films and like most film directors work is like to set up a certain level of like deception. Right.
Yeah.
So he's frozen, been chasing him the whole movie. He's like unkillable. He gets all frozen and stuck and like he loses his legs and he's got like one arm. This is the deceptive setup, right? Which is like close up shot. Arnold Schwarzenegger, hero of the movie, says famously,
"Hasta la vista, baby."
Shoots him. He shatters into a million pieces. You've set up this expectation, not by the shattering and destruction of the bad guy, but more importantly with this like hero's moment.
Right? Hero's line. Yeah, absolutely. It has a kind of finality to it.
Oh, big time. Like if you're watching the movie there, right? You're like, this is the end of the movie. We just had this huge JC. We had this huge shootout. Blow up Skynet. They got rid of all of the problems that they've had, basically. And now the villain, the Jason Voorhees, is like, he's dead. He's about to die. You give this big payoff. The audience is like stirred with emotion because it is that like iconic, heroic close-up hasta la vista. Baby blows him up. He's in a million little pieces. And then within like 2.5 minutes after that, like, so first of all, the bad guy gets up like immediately.
Yeah.
Right. He starts, and the way that it's done is like building suspense again. It's like, so here we are, the audience. You have this moment of like elation where you can like almost like rest easier. Like the chase is done, and then you immediately show all of these little pieces of metal melting because of the steel mill that they're in, pools all back together, creates Robert Patrick again, who's completely unscathed, And then just to this kind of like expectation of like victory, defeat, right? That you're always trying to set up is like within, I don't know, 2 minutes.
Yeah.
The T-800 Arnold Schwarzenegger has powered down and is defeated and dead.
Yep. Yep.
Hurry!
Only to reemerge once again victoriously and as hero.
Yep. And you see that this is something that's replayed several times in the second movie, and it's a callback to probably the most horrifying, one of the most horrifying scenes in the first movie, which also comes towards the climax when the T-800, the original Arnold Schwarzenegger bad guy Terminator, appears to be destroyed in a fiery crash, right? Where he still has some remnants of his Arnoldness, even though he's like missing an eye and he's severely damaged. I believe he's limping. And this fiery crash occurs. And Kyle, who's come back from the future to save young Sarah Connor, and Sarah Connor embrace in the foreground. And then in the background from the fire emerges this metal endoskeleton of the T-800 still ready to chase them, right? And just that relentlessness is terrifying. When you think like, I mean, if you think about the pacing of that movie, when, I mean, when that happens and you're just exhausted and you see that this is going to keep going, it's just, it's horrifying and it's defeating. And I think the second movie plays on that several times with this new kind of very difficult to understand Terminator in the T-1000, who can just keep coming and coming and coming and overcoming all of these things that would have been obstacles for the older model Terminator. So it does that really effectively.
Yeah. And I think it's a lot of horror movies do effectively, like I was saying, which is just to like, you think Jason or Freddy is dead, and then they show up and they're like three times more horrifying than they were in the last scene.
Right.
Which yep. this movie does, and so does T, in exactly the scene that you're describing, right? Like Arnold Schwarzenegger as the Terminator is already terrifying.
Yeah, just going through the like, phone book and killing people named Sarah Connor is like
emotionless, mechanical. He's like already scary. And then it's like, here we are at the climax of the film. It's like, what can make him any scarier? Oh, he's a fully metal skeleton with burning red eyes. It's like, you know what I mean? Like you're always kind of, it's like every time you think you've defeated the bad guy, they come back even more monstrous.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, again, this is like what this is kind of what happens in this movie as well, is like every except for I think that the difference between them in their horror elements is the T-1000. And maybe this is like a, from a horror perspective, almost like a critique of the film,
mm-hmm.
is the T-1000's thing is like, he's utterly like, what's scary about him is that he like, no matter what, he can't be killed, but he never actually morphs into a worse and scarier version of himself in a certain sense.
Yes, absolutely.
But then you get this thing again where Linda Hamilton has this like, I don't know, like really jacked up shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
And they're at the ledge of, and this is again, just like directors setting things up, right? Is like we've established, all right, so to kind of set this up, right, is take it from the liquid nitrogen stuff, right? So Hasta La Vista, baby. He shoots him. He falls apart into a million pieces. Now those pieces are melting and they turn into like almost like a pool of liquid metal. And he comes back up and he is this back into his form that can chase them again. The monster has returned, even though us, the audience, convinced the monster was dead.
Mm-hmm.
So now our heroes, which are John Connor, the Terminator, and Linda Hamilton, Sarah Connor, running through the steel mill, looking for a way out or looking for a place to hide. And they come across this pool of like, I don't even know what it is, right? And it's like, you as an audience I don't even think it matters what it is, but it's like a pool of like
molten metal.
Molten metal, right? And it's like this little thing that, you know, it's not a big thing, but they're running around and Arnold is kind of leading them towards this pool of molten metal. And Linda Hamilton goes, too hot. As in, it's too hot for them to stand to be close to. So they have to turn around, right? The rest of the sequence is setting up that Robert Patrick and Linda Hamilton are facing off on this deck that is directly above this pool of molten lava that we understand without having to understand that it will kill the bad guy. Right. So here we are right at the precipice, literally, of a situation in which the Terminator, the bad Terminator, the T-1000, Robert Patrick, can be killed. she's got this like super jacked up shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
And she starts shooting him. And every time she shoots him, it like forces him back a foot or two. And she has this big heroic push where she shoots him and she jacks the shotgun or pumps the shotgun or whatever and shoots him again and shoots him again. And he gets closer and closer. And he's like one shot from the edge. And here we are again as an audience. Like we're setting up this expectation that the monster is going to be killed. And she goes one last time, pulls the trigger. And there's nothing left. She's out of ammo. And all of the wounds on the T-1000 instantly heal. And then he slowly looks up at her and he wags his finger at her like, no.
Yeah.
Which is this like really horrifying setup because, and I use that term specifically because it's like, there's nowhere else to go.
Yeah.
Like she is going to die. And that's where, you know, we get that big heroic moment of Arnold riding a gear with a grenade launcher who shoots him in the chest. And it's just so awesome. But like, that's the continual setup is like precipice of victory or a perceived victory followed by your position being worse than it was 30 frames earlier in the film. Linda Hamilton's about to kill him. She runs out of ammo. He's completely healed and wags his finger at her like, I'm going to kill you.
Yep.
And you're like, oh, she's going to die. Then, you know, again, we eventually do get to a victory for our protagonist because we want the movie. It is a summer blockbuster, so we do want it to be satisfying for the audience. And the good guys win.
Right. So if you haven't seen this movie, now you know that the heroes do prevail at the end of Terminator 2. But there is still so much you don't know. And the truth is, there is so much that Dutch and I don't know, but we're going to talk about it anyway. And I think, like I said, as a service for the people who haven't seen the movie so they can still enjoy the show, I would like to explain the story. And explaining the story involves dealing with Terminator and Terminator 2. There is another film that came out at the end of last year called Terminator Dark Fate that is canon with the first two and disregards all of the other ones that were made along the way, which is Terminator 3, Terminator Salvation, and Terminator Genesis. They're just sort of erased from existence. And the reason why this is done is after T2, James Cameron, the director of the first two films and the producer, and I think the writer, lost the rights and did not reacquire them until maybe 2017, and then made this third movie that is interesting, but is in many ways just a rehashing of the plot of the second one. So, I mean, definitely worth seeing than any of the other sequels that are disregarded by it. But if we're just sticking to Terminator 1 and Terminator 2, we've got quite a story here to unfold.
I'm going to say in perpetuity, I think that should be your job because you're way better than it. Than I am. I tend to just ramble on like an idiot, get all tangent-y. So I'm going to let you take this one because you're better at podcasting than I am.
I'm so happy this is happening. I'm excited to do this right now. I'm going to warn everybody, this is about to get pretty weird. Okay. And there's going to be some things that might cause some headaches. You might even lose sleep over what we're going to try to explain to you here. Let's start in 1984 with Terminator 1. The film essentially takes place in the year 1984, where Sarah Connor is a 20-something. She's a waitress. And this machine, the T-800, played by Arnold Schwarzenegger, comes back in time to kill her. And this machine is quickly trailed by a soldier, a human named Kyle Reese, whose job is to intercept the Terminator and protect Sarah Connor. It is quickly revealed once they unite and Kyle saves her for the first time from getting shot. You see this scene. We mentioned this already, but it's horrifying. Even before Arnold, you know, becomes a robo-skeleton, or even earlier than that, he loses one of his eyes. And it's just like the imagery is terrifying in this film. But scary enough, it starts out where he goes, he gets some guns, and he pulls Connor out of the phone book, and he just goes and he shoots everyone in L.A. named Sarah Connor. The last person he comes to is our protagonist. Kyle intercepts her, takes her away, and then a chase ensues. And during the chase, he explains to her, this is a robot from the future sent here to kill you, and I'm here to protect you. And the reason why is because in the future, robots, or this technology, basically takes over, decides to do away with humanity, and your son leads the resistance. So towards the end of the war, as a last stop measure, Skynet, this technology, sends this Terminator back in time. In the future, they're called hunter killers. Sends this Terminator back in time to kill you so your son can never be born. And I'm here to stop it. And that film plays out, and Kyle and Sarah eventually, Kyle dies, but Sarah eventually prevails, crushing the Terminator right before it chokes her to death in a hydraulic press in some kind of factory, which we later find out is called Cyberdyne Systems. And that's basically how the first movie ends. She literally rides off into the desert, somebody says to her, a storm is coming, and she says, I know, and that's how the first film ends. The second movie...
Beautifully done, Brett.
Thank you. The second movie takes place 11 years later in 1995. The film came out in 1991. So in this film, the Arnold Schwarzenegger character, the T-800, reappears, and he is trailed by a very human-looking Robert Patrick that we later find out is this more advanced Terminator, the T-1000. So, God, I got to stop here because I was thinking, you know, how could we, if somebody hadn't seen this film, how could we prevent, how could we not spoil it? But there's no way to do it. I thought about it. And
this show requires spoilers for us to talk about thematic arcs and things like that. I think at some point you need a disclaimer on this thing where it's like, if you don't want this film that came out in 1991 spoiled, that you shouldn't watch, that you shouldn't listen to the show.
So we talked about Walker Percy. I agree with you. Yeah, that does need to be there. And the loss of the creature, this idea that it's very hard to have an authentic experience with something that has existed or people have enjoyed or talked about or raved about for a long period of time. People who experienced Terminator 2 as a theatrical release had the film spoiled for them in the trailer, I would say. I am going to argue that the trailer, the existence of the trailer for Terminator 2, hurts the viewer experience of the movie, even though the viewer experience of the movie is still extraordinary.
Same make.
These were taken at the West Highland Police Station, 1984. You were there.
Same model.
These were taken today.
You have to let me see my son. He's in great danger.
New mission. Once, he was programmed to destroy the future.
You don't know what it's like to try to kill one of these things.
Now, his mission...
Get down!
...is to protect it.
Mom!
Come with me if you want to live.
Real.
His loyalty is to a child.
Who sent you?
You did. 35 years from now.
And his enemy.
He's a Terminator like you, right?
Not like me.
Is the deadliest machine ever built.
Can it be destroyed?
Unknown.
This time, there are two. Terminator 2.
You just can't go around killing people.
Why?
If you thought you had seen it all, look again.
Stay down!
Go now!
We gotta stick together!
Arnold Schwarzenegger. Terminator 2, Judgment Day. This time, he's back. For good.
Trust me.
Now, pause and just go back to the plot. Same kind of idea where Arnold the T-800 is kind of in the Kyle Reese role, a reprogrammed Terminator from the future, now sent to protect John Connor from this more advanced T-1000, and the story plays out pretty much in the same way. The basic timeline... In the 1990s, about 2 years after the second film, this company, Cyberdyne Systems, creates this weapons defense, finger quotes, technology called Skynet. Skynet quickly becomes self-aware and decides to eliminate the human race, which it sees as a threat because they're trying to shut down Skynet because, you know, as a self-aware AI, it is obviously a danger to the human race. So its next move is to prove that by destroying most of humanity in a nuclear holocaust. 20 years after this event, which is called Judgment Day, in 2017, a human resistance is led by John Connor in the future is formed, and a human Skynet war begins. The war rages on for more than a decade, and sometime around 2029, the Skynet technology has some kind of time displacement equipment that they use to send the first Terminator back to kill Sarah Connor. At this point, the Resistance immediately learns of this, and they send Kyle Reese back to 1984 to follow the Terminator to protect Sarah Connor. So that takes us from 1984 to 2029 and back to 1984. What we don't know, and what Kyle probably doesn't know, and what Sarah doesn't know in the first Terminator movie, is that many Terminators might have been sent to different points, right? So if the war continues after they send the T-800 back to kill Sarah Connor in 1984, Skynet knows none of this is in the movie. Okay, so now it's just getting into some level of Jack Offrey here. But Skynet knows they have to send another Terminator or multiple Terminators to various points in time to try and kill John Connor in different, you know, settings or situations or periods in his life, which is how the plot of the second movie takes place. We don't know how much of a time gap there is between the first T-800 being sent back and Kyle Reese following it through the same equipment, we think, and then sending the T-1000 back, Skynet sending the T-1000 back to kill Child John 11 years later, and the humans sending a reprogrammed T-800 good guy back to protect John. There might be a couple of years, but we really don't know. It's not clear, and I'm sure there's lots of fan theorizing about it, but I didn't want to dig into all that because fan theorizing could take up the whole show. Now, just when you thought this was complicated enough, it is Kyle in the first movie that tells Sarah when he gets there, he says, "I came across time for you." Again, this is Terminator 1, 1984. "I love you." They have sex. She gets pregnant. The child is John Connor. Also, at the end of this first movie, Sarah crushes the T-800 in a hydraulic press. The only things that survive are one of the robot arms that is sticking out of the hydraulic press trying to choke her and a computer chip. This company, Cyberdyne Systems, then uses this technology as the inspiration for creating Skynet. So you have this kind of what is called a predestination paradox or a causal loop where you're not looking at a new timeline when Kyle gets sent back and the Terminator gets sent back. You're kind of asked to believe that this is how things always have happened. Kyle goes back. He becomes John Connor's father. The T-800 goes back. It gets crushed in a hydraulic press. And this is the creation of both John Connor and Skynet, which is, a bit of a trick to understand.
I got to be honest, when we get into the weeds with that, because I've thought about this on my own, it almost ruins the movie because there's missing in any timeline the initial incident which Skynet has created, and then they have to send a Terminator back to kill Sarah Connor, which would then precipitate the creation of baby John Connor. So in a weird way, it kind of ruins everything when you think about it, because none of those things would have happened without the creation of Skynet. And I've never been able to wrap my head around it, but I enjoy the movie so much that I completely ignore it. I'll go into the weeds with you for 1 second.
Okay.
Unless Skynet itself is ultimately the destiny of man, which is something that's kind of alluded to by Linda Hamilton's character, I think. There's this scene where there's these two little kids playing with fake guns in a park at a rest stop.
Yeah.
And she says it's human nature that we're all going to kill each other, right? And this movie has like a whole lot of commentary on man and technology and like Cold War politics and all of that kind of stuff, right? But yeah, like I said, it doesn't make, unless part of what we're supposed to kind of take in is that, and then this is another thread though, that if you pull this whole thing to me kind of falls apart. but Skynet is essentially like destiny, like it's gonna happen one way or another, then it wouldn't matter. Then the computer chip or the arm wouldn't matter.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's gonna happen anyway. But then to accept the premise of the entire premise that we're going along with in this movie, which is, again, just to recap, Skynet exists, Judgment Day happens, everybody dies. And then a Terminator is sent back to kill the leader of the Resistance's mom.
Yeah.
And then she gets pregnant because the Resistance sends back a fighter to protect her. Now, again, how is there a leader of the Resistance? How is there a John Connor to send back a Kyle Reese to protect if this didn't happen already? Are you following me here?
Yeah. So we're in the weeds.
It's
do you want to go underground?
We're in the weeds.
No, do you want to see if we can find some mushrooms to eat?
I actually think the more that one kind of harps on this,
yeah,
is the more that one will not enjoy what is otherwise two completely enjoyable films.
What I would warn against is, you know, when this film came out, we all had VCRs. Entertainment was not what it is today. So I probably watched this movie on VHS 30 times. You could watch it over and over and over again, and it would be just as enjoyable. And it's continuing in our series of films here that I saw once, like 20 more in this case, almost 30 years ago. I saw a bunch of times a long time ago, and then there was a huge watching gap, and then I just watched it again recently. So yeah, I agree that you do have to accept this kind of causal loop paradox. I think you can play around with this and still enjoy the film plenty, but you certainly can't torture yourself with trying to understand what's going on here. What you're asked to believe is that things somehow have always happened this way. There is no actual entry point where the timeline is altered until the second movie, where the timeline clearly is altered because they destroy Skynet, or they destroy Cyberdyne systems by blowing up the whole building. And that's something that I think we'll get to. The last thing I want to say just about symbolism. So we went down in the weeds, then we went underground, then you took mushrooms when I asked you to. Now we start to trip. Here's the final part of this. The T-800 and Kyle Reese go back in time and encounter Sarah Connor. Sarah Connor and Kyle Reese are the parents of John Connor, but they are also essentially, symbolically, the parents of Skynet, right? If she doesn't crush the T-800 in the hydraulic press, Cyberdyne Systems never finds that stuff. They never start doing their research. There is no Skynet. There is no Judgment Day. There is no human-robot war. So the commentary there, if you want to dig for it, is that this is the human condition, right? This is the fate of humanity. That on the one side, there is this creation of, you know, all that is good. And on the other side, there is this creation of all that is wicked. If you establish that Kyle and Sarah are the parents of both John Connor, who is the presumed hero of the first movie and part of the team of heroes in the second movie, and Skynet, they're also the parents essentially of Skynet, the villain in both films. That, I think, is an interesting commentary on this thing that you touched on earlier, which is the fate of the human race.
Surely you know by now my heart is wild. I don't want to be tied down, it ain't my style. Don't you think I know very well this kind of attitude is selfish? But I can't help it, I'm destiny's child. I couldn't begin to tell you if I tried. It meant so much to love you for a little while. Try to remember all of the good love. I wish you understood love. I ain't no good love. I'm destiny's child. Destiny's child. Destiny's child. Gotta be somewhere else, I don't know why. Keep thinking of all I'm losing. I know your lips are soothing. I gotta be moving, I'm destiny's child.
I must wish you well and say goodbye. I wish you moons and stars and sunny skies. You gave me so much to believe in. My life has a little more meaning. Still I'm leaving. I'm destiny's child. Destiny's child. Destiny's child.